CellLink Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Here they come, checker flag!
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Will Dillon have help? No, they come down to block. Logano goes back up, Keselowski with him. McDowell in tow, Dillon on the bottom.
The run's on top.
Oh!
Teammates!
Around they go and a hard crash. Kyle Busch.
Larson.
Caution is out.
Bubba Wallace is in this. Austin Cindric, hard hit by Kyle Busch. Caution's out.
McDowell is first to the line, but will have to go back to the moment of caution, which ends the race. Brad Keselowski is climbing out. He's okay. Joey Logano.
There you go, the final lap of the Daytona 500. A wild one it was. Welcome into Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe here with you every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. You heard the call there from Fox Sports, Mike Joy, Jeff Gordon, and Clint Bowyer in the booth. Loved having Bowyer in the booth, by the way. And a wild one. And you two teammates getting into each other, and we're going to get into that. You're going to hear from both Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano here in just a few minutes, because word on the street is those two have not talked since the Daytona 500. So still a little upset after the ending to the Great American Race. But it was a wild one. The thing that stunk was they got 15 laps in, there was a wreck, and then there was a six-hour rain delay. And I feel like that is something that has been plaguing the Daytona 500 the last few years. You know, last year had to be run on a Monday, and so that hurts ratings. And I felt like going into it that so many people that either are longtime NASCAR fans like me were really excited about this, and there's just a different feel to the sport now, a good feel in a good way. And then there were other people that are new, are jumping in and watching the sport for a myriad of reasons that were excited about it. And it just, you know, it affected ratings, obviously, because they didn't get it going again until, you know, 8 o'clock our time. But I watched it and it was fun. Interesting to see how it all shook out, but let's get right into it. I mentioned that wreck on lap 15. Took out a lot of the heavy hitters. I mean, the pole sitter, Alex Bowman, was a part of that, and, you know, he was just kind of minding his business. And what was interesting is it was aggressive. And I get that, you know, you want to win stage points, but they were still a long way from the end of the first stage. And there was some thought, okay, maybe they're racing the rain, maybe they're racing to halfway, they might not get all 500 miles in. But 15 laps in, come on, let's let some things shake out. And after that point in the race, I found myself, once they finally got going again, every time that things would get a little dicey, I'd be saying, don't wreck, don't wreck, don't wreck. Now, I didn't love the fact that they were just running single file on the top the whole time, but you could tell that everybody was being cautious. They knew what was going to happen. They try and go double file or three wide. That's what you're going to see, what you saw there on lap 15. I mentioned Alex Bowman. He actually joined us on Darren Donick and Chase yesterday. And if you miss any of that, you can go to thegamenashville.com. But Darren asked the question of how difficult is it to get hype, get ready to go, get yourself pumped up for 500 miles, and then go 15 laps and be disappointed. Here's what Bowman had to say.
Yeah, it's really difficult. You know, for us, the week was you know, it had gone really well. We were strong in the clash, didn't get the finish we deserved. We had an issue there at the end, and move on to Daytona 500 qualifying, sit on the pole. Really cool for Ally and everybody that was a part of that. You know, obviously that's a great feeling for all the guys. And from then on, it's really about taking care of the 500 car and making sure everything is good for that race specifically. You know, we had a really fast race car. It was dialed in. And the Daytona 500 is such a long event. It's so hard to make it to the end. And all 40 of us know that. Like, every right. race car driver knows we got to get to the end. So you're pumped up and you're ready to go. But you also know, like, hey, like, there's a lot of lulls to that race. Like, you really take it easy for the most part, aside from the stage ends and the last couple laps. Well, I guess some people didn't really feel that way, and and obviously kind of minding my own business, and 15 laps into the race were junk stuck in the mud on the inside of the racetrack and heading to the house. So it is hard to go from being really pumped up for the biggest race of the year, and you've got all, like, the off-season anticipation and everything going on, and new sponsor, new car number, and then 15 laps into a race, so you're talking less than 15 minutes into what should take 3.5 hours, and you're done. So it's tough. You know, it wasn't much fun, but that's kind of part of it, and I think it's a really big part of, you know, our sport, especially at super speedways, because it's so easy to get caught up in something that you have really nothing to do with.
Alex Bowman on his day at Daytona, and that's what was so interesting to me, is usually, you know, if you see a big wreck earlier in the race, then you're just going to see more. You're going to see a couple of them, because they're still going to be just as aggressive. But that didn't happen this year. It was like they had 6 hours to think about that and go, all right, we got a long way to go. This is a long race, so let's just chill. Let's see what we got, and then we'll settle it at the end. But then what happened is I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm going, okay, cool, good. But just get to 10 to go, and then let's crank it up a little bit. And they didn't do that. And that's very uncharacteristic. I thought once they got to that point, and you had a situation too where they were doing green flag pit stops. I mean, there weren't any cautions. I mean, it was very rare. And so they did a couple of rounds of green flag pit stops. They had the stage breaks, which obviously were cautions. And then you have the Fords pitting together, and the Chevys and the Toyotas and all the manufacturers working together. Bubba has the issue, in which really sunk, because I thought Bubba had a good car. He had a really good run, Bubba Wallace. And so he has the issue. He's helping. He's there to help Denny, but, you know, he's out of it because he's a lap down. But I'm still thinking, okay, there's going to be a caution. He'll get back on the lead lap. He could be a factor. And none of that happened. It literally took to the final lap of them being single file. And then finally, we see moves get made, but it was almost like it was too late. And then, as I mentioned, Logano and Brad Keselowski get into each other. And I know that, you know, they're upset, but that's Daytona. That's how it is. Let's hear from Brad Keselowski. This was the interview he did on Fox Sports right after the wreck, and you can tell he's upset.
Had a big run down the back stretch. Went to make the pass to win the Daytona 500, and it ended up really bad. I don't feel like I made a mistake, but I can't drive everybody else's car. So frustrating. The discount tire Ford was not the fastest, but Jeremy Bowen's whole team did a great job of keeping us in position. Right then, we were in position. It's exactly where I want to be, running second on the last lap at Daytona with this package. And had to run, made the move, and it didn't work out.
You heard him last week when he joined us on Chasing Checkers, and that's available on the podcast. That he wants, that's the one. That's the one he doesn't have. He has a championship. He's won Southern 500s. He's won at Talladega. He's won everything except for the Daytona 500. So I certainly understand being frustrated, being upset like he was. And if you watch it, if you go and you watch the replay, you know, there's a lot. You can come up with a lot of different theories of what happened. The bottom line, in my opinion, is that's Daytona. That's just, you guys are going to block. You're going to get somebody that gets a run from behind, is going to bump into you, going to send you into the other guy, and that's what happened. I'm going to post this on my Twitter, but Dale Earnhardt Jr. did a great explanation of blocking and the art of blocking on his show, the Dale Jr. Download, and Dirty Mo tweeted it out. So I'll tweet that out. But, you know, he brings up Joey Logano as an aggressive blocker. That's what he does. But he also explained that, you know, you have to also know as a driver when they have you. When you're dead to rights, you just have to understand that that's what it is. Moving down is exactly what happened. You're going to have a wreck. Now, did McDowell hit Keselowski too hard and that started the chain reaction? Could be. But, again, that's Daytona. Joey Logano, later in the week, met with the media. Now, this is kind of a long clip, but it's a good explanation. He explains what he saw from his point of view.
I mean, there's always going to be things that you see it. You want it to go differently. Can't change it now, though. That's the bottom line. You know, I look at it and see that, you know, in my opinion, and everyone's going to have one, right? But mine is that, you know, I'm up in the mirror. I'm watching this all develop behind me. And when the 34 and the 2 hook up, they start coming up with a run, throw a mile block. But when Brad moves to the left to pass me, that gets the 34 off center on his bumper. And these cars are very unstable when they're getting pushed. It's not like when we used to tandem when we had a pair of 400s across the back. You know, there's not much mechanical grip in our cars anymore because of the lower ride heights. We're trying to get the spoiler out of here, all that stuff, right, to make speed. So for those reasons, when a car gets off-centered as much as McDowell was on Brad, it's going to push him around just the same way like we saw the first crash happen. And at that point, you know, from watching it in slow motion and trying to dissect it, I see Brad's hands turning to the left, you know, and then the back end of his car is further left than he is. That means he's going to the right at that moment, spinning out. And that's why I got tagged so hard in the left rear. It spun me out so quick. So that's how I see it happen. It's quite the bummer that it happened because you're so close to winning the Great American Race. And you think, you know, four laps before that, you know, or really 30 laps before that, you got four Fords behind you. You'll be in your teammate and, you know, everyone's working together and think everything's going to be fine. You know, you're pretty stoked about the situation, kind of the best scenario you can possibly be in, for the last 30 laps of that race. You know, and then, once I saw Brad lay back and shuffle the four out, I said, okay, this game's about to change. This isn't going the way I would expect it to. And I knew that things were going to be a little different. And that's what, you know, kind of developed in the last few laps is cars were laying back so much, you know, trying to form runs. I'm backing up, trying to keep everyone, you know, tight behind me and not get so far out because everyone's going, you know, checking up behind me, trying to form runs that you just know that there's just so much energy being built up. Everyone's going to be bumper to bumper. And you saw that all come to fruition when we went down the back straightaway and everyone opened it up. And, you know, you saw some cars on the bottom of that top lane had five cars pushing each other. It's going to be a few runs coming at you that way. So that's just how it ended.
Here's the bottom line. Brad Keselowski is going to say, I didn't make a mistake. That's my story. Joey Logano is going to say, I didn't make a mistake. They had a run. I went to block. I had the position, yada, yada, yada. It's Daytona, and you can make all these – I'm not going to say excuses. He's not making an excuse, but he's saying that, you know, the cars are set up this way and, you know, you can't do – okay. But everybody knows that that's what it is, and it's the last lap of the Daytona 500. The checkers or wreckers mentality comes into play, and unfortunately for two Roger Penske drivers, they wrecked. And they didn't win it. Denny Hamlin dominated the whole race. He didn't win it. And here comes Michael McDowell. Michael McDowell of Front Row Motorsports. Michael McDowell, who was 357 or 0 for 357 in his NASCAR Cup Series career. Michael McDowell, who is known for the crash at Texas Motor Speedway that looked awful, a practice crash, and he walked away. And by the way, both wrecks in this one, the lap 15 and the one in the end that was fiery. I mean, Kyle Busch took a hell of a hit. It hits home even more 20 years after Earnhardt's death that all those drivers got out on their own and walked away. Just shows you where the sport is at safety-wise. But Michael McDowell gets his first win, and it's the biggest race of the year. Michael McDowell talked with Fox Sports right at the end.
I just can't believe it. Just got to thank God. So many years just grinding it out, hoping for an opportunity like this. Got to thank Love's Travel Stop, Speedco, Bob Jenkins for giving me this opportunity. I'm so thankful. Such a great way to get a first victory at Daytona 500. Are you kidding me? Just want to say hi to my wife back home. Happy Valentine's Day. I know it's been a tough week. My kids, I love you guys. I wish they could be here with me to celebrate. Maybe NASCAR will send the plane to bring them down here. But we're the Daytona 500 champions. I cannot believe this. Thank you, Doug Yates, Ford. We had our Ford partners at the end, and they all crashed. And luckily, I was able to make it through. Just so thankful. God is good.
Michael McDowell is the nicest human being that you'll ever meet. Had the opportunity to have him on the podcast. I met him a couple times at Daytona. Just very down to earth, very strong in his faith. He has witnessed to a lot of drivers in the garage area, helped a lot of drivers. And so everybody gets out of their cars and they're all ticked off that they didn't win the Daytona 500. And then they look up and they see McDowell and they go, okay. I can be okay with that because that guy deserves it. He stuck around. He runs for and the thing that I love about Front Row Motorsports is they don't hide the fact that they're not one of the big boys. I mean, they know what they are. You know, they're mid-pack. They have sponsorship from Loves and a few others. They're a multi-car team, but they don't have the resources that the Gibbs or the Hendricks or Richard Childress, you know, any of those have. They know that. But Daytona is the wild card, or in Talladega. It's wide open. This is now their second win as an organization, and they both came at super speedways. But when we come back, we're going to talk about how this is an even bigger deal for McDowell, not just from a racing standpoint, but what this does for this season for him and that team. We'll discuss that when we come back here. It's Chasing Checkers on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
Back here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app. If you miss anything today, we're on wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Google. Just search Chasing Checkers, rate, subscribe, and review. You'll get each week's episode, plus interviews and some extras throughout the season as well, with much more coming soon. Talking Daytona 500, wrapping that up, Michael McDowell gets the win. The top 10 for you, Chase Elliott comes home second, Austin Dillon third. Dillon had a really good race car, really nice car. Kevin Harvick fourth, Denny Hamlin leads the most laps, dominates, looks like he's going to go three in a row, comes home fifth. His fate was sealed on those last round of pit stops, just couldn't get back up front. Ryan Preece needed a good run, got a good run, finished sixth. Ross Chastain in his first race in the 42 goes seventh. Jamie McMurray in a one-off in the 77. He'll return to Fox Sports. He gets a top 10. Very nice for him. And Corey LaJoie, his teammate, with his first race with Spire Motorsports, he finishes ninth. And Kyle Larson, even though he got caught up in that wreck, comes home 10th. In his first race with Hendrick Motorsports. Our guest in the next segment, Cole Custer, driver of the 41, comes home 11th. So we'll talk to him in a few minutes. So why is this such a big deal for Michael McDowell? Number one, you win the Daytona 500. You got the Harley J. Earl Trophy. I mean, that's bragging rights. You got to go to the champions breakfasts and do all the things that come with winning the Daytona 500. And he will forever be in the history books. So right there, that automatically, it's like Derek Cope. You know, not a lot of people remember Derek Cope except for he won the Daytona 500. No offense to Derek Cope, but that's it. I mean, he gets that for the rest of his life and career. But here's why it's even more important now for a team like Front Row Motorsports. It's the finances. Winning that one race is going to do so much for that team. I read a tweet last night. NBC Sports source is saying that for the next 3 years, because of that win, they'll get $1.6 million for that. $1 million going to that team next year. I mean, that's huge. you don't realize for how expensive it is to run a race team, and you get extra money like that for winning one race. That's huge. That takes you a long way. CarParts.com, which has been an associate sponsor, has put more money, invested more money into the team now and come on board because of that Daytona 500 win. That's huge. That, I mean, right there, I'll use the analogy, it's just like Days of Thunder. And a lot's been made about that with the documentary that Fox was airing. Very cool, by the way. The Golden Hour. You should check it out. But it was, you know, the race team was, they were going to shut down if they couldn't get a sponsor. They win the race, they get a sponsor. Superflow comes on and Cole Trickle's ready to go. That's what this is. And they've had sponsorship. It's not like this team has had zero sponsorship, but now they get even more money. And here's the other part. They're in the playoffs now. That changes everything. They are now in the playoffs. And so what does that mean moving forward? First, again, Michael McDowell, the kind of guy he is and just how special this is. And he's very open about it. He talked when he met with the media after the race, he discussed his journey.
Yeah, I mean, you guys all know it's been a tough road for me, and I've had to spend a lot of years grinding it out. But, you know, I finally have felt like this last 4 years, you know, been more competitive and greater opportunities with Front Row and Bob Jenkins. And, you know, Daytona has been so good to us that we've been in the top 10, we've been in the top five, we've been close. And, you know, last lap, there's been times where I've made the wrong choice and wrong lane and pushed the wrong guy. And it's just so hard to get in position and to do it. And, you know, to get my first cup win at Daytona, it's unbelievable. I'm just so thankful. Thankful for everybody that just has allowed me to do it. You know, it's not been an easy road, and there's been lots of years where I was wondering what the heck am I doing and why am I doing it. And I always knew that if you just kept grinding that, you know, one day everything will line up and it'll go right. And but as you get further into it, you just don't know. So I'm just thankful, very thankful to everybody that made it possible.
Thankful, humble. That's Michael McDowell. But again, this sets up a situation for him where now his team is, you know, they're able to get more resources. They're getting more sponsorship money. Now it's, you know, going to be one of those that you got to do it again. You know, you can't just live forever off that one moment. But I believe that this can help set them up. And like I said, the team's won before with Chris Buescher a few years ago, but it wasn't the Daytona 500. The Daytona 500 is very different. And now, like I said, they're in the playoffs after one race. So Drew Blickensterfer is his crew chief. He won the Daytona 500 with Matt Kenseth. But he was asked in post-race media availability about, you know, knowing the situation and knowing that McDowell had never won. You know, what's kind of the mindset when you go in to one of these races? Here's what he had to say.
I don't have that outlook, but I do have I'm a realist, right? Like, I'm at Front Row Motorsports and with Michael McDowell and our team. We're not Chase Elliott. We're not Hendrick Motorsports. So you have to pick your chances. I get super fired up when I come speedway racing. You know, I love to come to Daytona and Talladega, and so does Michael. And those are chances for us. Everybody says they have a chance when they come here, but in reality, there's a handful of guys that run good at these places week in or every time we come. Michael's one of those guys. And I think, you know, when we come here and when we come back next week, we might not have the fastest car, you know, at the road course, but we have a chance to run really well. And if circumstances play out, just like tonight, we could be there at the end. And we have to maximize those chances because there's only five or six of them a year for Front Row versus, you know, if you're at Stuart Haas or if you're at Penske or Hendrick or someplace like that.
But if you maximize those chances, you know, majority of the time, that's going to increase the number of chances that you get, right? And I'm not saying that McDowell is going to become Chase Elliott, like he referenced, you know, after this win. But they win the Daytona 500. They come back this week, run top 10. Hey, that's good. That puts you even in a better position in the point standings. It helps with sponsorship money, all of that stuff. That you stretch that out through the season. But here's the other part of it. Now that they're locked in the playoffs and everybody in that team knows they're going to be in the playoffs and their sponsors know that they're going to be in the playoffs, from Drew Blickensterfer's point of view, if there's a situation, they're at Texas and there's pit strategy, it's becoming a fuel mileage race. And he'd be fighting, and he said this later in the availability, and they're fighting for a top 15. But if he gambles, they could be top 10, top 5, or win. He's going to be more inclined to gamble. He doesn't have to worry about just finishing top 15 and being just, you know, average. He can go for it. He can go after another win or, you know, top fives. It sets them up for the rest of the year. And you can say that about anybody that wins the Daytona 500. But again, if you're, you know, because I remember when Dale Earnhardt Jr. won in 2014, this format, I think, was just starting. It was in its first or second year. And he said, you know, well, we're in the chase now. And, you know, that kind of changes the mindset. Yeah, but they're a team that's going to be competitive. These big teams, you know that they're going to have other chances. It's all about capitalizing on your chances, and that's exactly what McDowell and Front Row Motorsports did. And I think it's a great story. It's going to be fun to watch as the season goes on and see just how competitive they truly can be. A little later in the show, we're going to talk to Chris Parker. He's with the Music City Grand Prix, which is coming to our city at the end of August, or at the beginning of August, I should say, August 6th through the 8th. Big announcement from them yesterday, so we'll talk to him. But when we come back, Cole Custer, he's a second-year driver for Stuart Haas Racing, drives the 41. He joins the show. Chasing Checkers, ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in. Chasing Checkers, ESPN, 102.5 The Game, streaming on The Game Nashville app as well. And if you miss anything, you can check us out on the podcast. Just search for Chasing Checkers. Excited to talk to our next guest, second-year driver in the Cup Series, Cole Custer, the number 41, Stuart Haas Racing Ford. Cole, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And Daytona, you guys are still there. You're going to run the road course, but the Daytona 500 has come and gone, and what a wild and wacky weekend. An 11th place finish for you all, but what was it like this year in the 500?
It was a crazy race, especially right off the bat. I mean, you know, guys wrecking on lap 15. I mean, people were going for it. And we were lucky enough to get our HaasTooling.com Mustang, you know, through that first wreck, and that kind of set us up for the rest of the race. You know, those races with the super speedways, it's a lot about, you know, just picking the right times to be aggressive and when not to be. And we were lucky enough to pick right this time and make it to the end where we needed to be.
What is the biggest difference in running super speedways or plate races, even though I know it's not a plate race technically anymore, but what is the biggest difference in running those in the Xfinity Series as opposed to the Cup Series?
You know, I think the biggest thing is just the amount of cars, you know, that are capable of winning. You have a lot of guys with a lot of experience in the Cup Series, and, you know, you probably got 30 cars that can go out there and win the race, so it's just a lot more, you know, you can get shuffled to the back way faster. It's a lot to try and stay up front.
You did something in your rookie year that not a lot of people can say. It's very, very hard to do in this series. You won a race, and I know that that's everyone's goal, but winning at Kentucky last season, how much of a boost did that give you confidence-wise in your rookie year and now in your second year in the Cup Series?
It was huge. I mean, for us as a team, honestly, just because – you know, once we won that race, you know, we know that we can go out there and do it. It's just a matter of us going out there and, you know, being consistent with it and doing it every single weekend, you know. So last year, I feel like we could hit it, you know, on certain weekends, and we can run in the top 10 and compete for wins. But we just need to do it more consistently this year. And I think that's going to happen with just experience, honestly.
So what was the biggest thing that you learned from your experience last season?
You know, the biggest thing is just, you have to take it one step at a time, I think, is the biggest thing. If you go out there and try to overthink things or try and do too much, I mean, you're going to put yourself in trouble, especially as a rookie. So I think it's just a matter of just taking your time and making sure you do the little things right and, if you do enough things right, you know, the small things, you're going to find yourself in a pretty good spot at the end of the races.
I love the balance of your race team because you have Harvick, who wins just about everything. He's a former champion. He's been doing this a long time. Eric Almirola is a winner as well. But then you have you in your second year and Chase Briscoe, your teammate, going into his rookie season. And I had him on last week and asked him how much you two lean on each other because you just went through the whole rookie thing and now he's going through it. But you're still kind of coming up and learning together. So what is that relationship like?
It's awesome. I mean, I think me and Chase have been friends now for a little while, and it's cool to kind of see what he's going through because I went through the same thing last year, honestly. So we've been good friends, and I think our communication is really good. So I'm always here for whenever he, is able, ever wants a question answered or anything like that. So he has a lot of talent. I think it's just a matter of just getting used to the cars is the biggest thing. I mean, it's a lot to be thrust into this, in the Cup Series, when you have no practice.
And then along those lines, I mentioned Harvick and Almirola. Harvick specifically, just because he won so much last year, and that team with Rodney Childers has been so successful since he got to the organization. What's it like being able to talk to a former Cup champ and multi-race winner?
It's huge to have somebody like that who has so much experience, and you're just able to, he's all there to just answer your questions and be able to give you so much support. So it's something that, I mean, I think last year, I think I called him every single race weekend about, trying to get ideas of what to look for going into the weekend and what his mindset, where his mindset was at. So to have that kind of, experience around you is pretty invaluable.
The schedule is going to be different this year, adding more diversity to it. 7 road courses on this schedule. You guys are coming to Nashville to the Super Speedway, which is going to be fun to have you here. How would you evaluate your road racing game? Because it's obviously going to have to step up for everybody this year.
Yeah, I think I'm a solid road racer. I mean, and I really always look forward to them. As a driver, it brings the driver more into it. You're downshifting, you're going left and right, you're braking hard, you're hopping curbs. So there's a lot that the driver, comes into play. So I think it's exciting to go into those races and see what you can do. With that, I mean, going into this year with more road races, I think it puts even more emphasis on, making sure that you're doing things right and getting more and more laps and more acquainted with road courses and stepping up your game even more. So that's what we're trying to do this year, and we're also trying to find little ways to get our cars better for the road courses. So it's just there's so much more emphasis on them this year, and we have to get them right.
With Daytona this weekend, the road course this weekend, you guys did that last year, and neither one of those races were originally on the schedule, but with COVID and having to move some things around, they got added. So what were some things maybe you picked up last year that you can apply to this season?
Oh, well, it's an exciting track for sure. I mean, you're going to be beating and banging, and, I think it just puts on some really good racing. But the biggest thing is just how abrasive the surface is. I mean, as a driver, managing your tires and all that, you spin the tires out almost every single corner just because there's no grip on the racetrack. So it's a hard place to get a hold of, and I think we definitely learned a lot last year on, what we can do better with our cars, and also me just figuring out how I can manage it better within the car.
Has there been a discussion amongst you drivers of, maybe taking the 9 car and trying to lock it in the garage or something? Because he's been pretty good. Chase has been pretty good at these places.
I'd like to, man, but they're not taking my ideas, I guess. But it's, yeah, they've been really fast. They've kind of set the standard of the road courses right now. So I think everybody's kind of chasing after them. But I think, we definitely have made gains, I feel like, on our cars. Everybody at Stuart Haas Racing has been working really hard to try and find whatever speed we can on the road courses and different ideas of setup ideas going to the racetrack. And I think we've definitely made gains, and we're moving in the right direction to go out there and compete for wins on the road courses.
Finally, Michael McDowell wins the Daytona 500, and I've met him a few times. I've interviewed him a few times. Could not be a nicer individual, and I know that
a lot of the drivers have said they're just so happy for him that he gets to experience that. What have been some of your conversations with Michael in the last couple of years?
I mean, just like you said, I mean, just the nicest guy in the world. I mean, he's, you know, go around the garage or in the, you know, wherever around the racetrack, he's going to be the first one to say hi. And, you know, anything, if you have a question for him or anything, he's happy to answer, and just always has a smile on his face. And I think everybody, you know, was happy for him to win that race. And he was definitely a guy who's very deserving of it.
Well, Cole, best of luck this weekend at the Daytona Road Course and for the rest of the season. Appreciate you taking the time to join me today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Cole Custer with a solid run in the Daytona 500 and looking to build upon his win from last year at Kentucky in his rookie season and going for more even this year. When we come back here on Chasing Checkers, they're turning right and left this weekend in NASCAR. Well, they're going to be doing that on the streets of Nashville this August, but it won't be NASCAR. It'll be IndyCar. We're going to talk to Chris Parker from the Music City Grand Prix. Get the latest on that, because there's a big name that has joined the fray as a part of the ownership group. We'll discuss that when we come back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Back here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts as well. Chase McCabe hanging out with you. I am very, very excited about what is coming to our city August 6th through the 8th, and it's not going to be at a racetrack. It's going to be on the streets of Nashville, and that's what's going to be cool. The streets of Nashville will become a racetrack. We say hello to Chris Parker. He is with the Music City Grand Prix, and again, that event coming August 6th through 8th. Chris, good to talk to you. Very excited about this.
Chase, how are you? Great to be on with you. Really appreciate it, and absolutely exciting times ahead here.
Before we get to the big announcement you guys had yesterday, this is not one of those events that you just go and it comes together. There has been a lot of work behind the scenes for a lot of time. So what has that process been like of putting this entire event together?
You know, it has been a long time coming, several years to put this all together. The logistics behind it are tremendous when you think about having to create a temporary road course in a city urban infrastructure environment. To work with all of the different groups that need to be involved, the city of Nashville, the Tennessee Titans, Nissan Stadium, Nashville Sports Council, the CBC, the Chamber, all of these organizations, the Downtown Partnership, all have to play a huge role in bringing this together. And that doesn't even begin to address needing a sanctioning agreement from IndyCar and also from GT America and Trans Am, which are our support series races, and then a bunch of other businesses that are adjacent to or in proximity to the race course. So it's a tremendous amount of logistics, and to everyone's credit, I think they've seen and really appreciated in the last couple of years the vision behind this and have really gotten on board. So here we are 6 months or so away, and things are really starting to come together.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the main event, I guess, is the IndyCar Series, the NTT IndyCar Series. But GT America, Trans Am Series, they're going to have races. But it's not even just racing. There's going to be a ton of food vendors and also entertainment. This is a festival. This is not just show up and watch a race. There is going to be something for everyone to do across these 3 days.
No question, and I think that that's been one of our most significant selling points all along. It's been the racing is kind of the excuse to have an event, to control programming in Nashville, America's It City, to build an urban festival. At the end of the day, if a large percentage of the people come out and they aren't race fans or they've never been to a race, they love going to concerts, they love hanging out with friends and family and business colleagues, if they love food vendors and food experiences, then there's absolutely going to be something for everyone at our event. So the running joke is, you know, maybe 50% of the people will watch racing and the other 50% of the people will say that they saw a car once going over the KVB. then we've done our job in creating a fantastic annual event for Nashville.
Now, Chris, I have $119 in my pocket right now. What is that going to get me at 10 a.m. on February 23rd, which is Tuesday?
Absolutely. That $119 is going to get you a three-day general admission pass. So that means that you're going to be able to come out Friday, Saturday, Sunday, go all around the property, check out the fan zone, check out the GA viewing areas, wander across into the Trans Am and or the GT America paddock area, be able to experience the concerts, be able to experience the food food expo areas, all of that for $119.
Now, we, you know, there are some people that they want to have a seat and they want to sit and watch the race. I know there are different ticket packages as well for $199 per seat. The great prices for people that are wanting to come out and see this and as you said, a three-day event.
Yeah, so for $199 on Tuesday, the 23rd at 10 a.m., you can buy a reserved grandstand seat. So that's the same seat every day, all 3 days. Think of it along the lines of like a season ticket. If you were a Pred season ticket holder or a Titan season ticket holder, I know where I'm going to go sit all 3 days of the racing. That's what you can get for $199.
And then you also have parking options starting at $99. You know, a lot of people that go to a race, they bring their campers. You got motorhome parking on there as well. You can go to musiccitygp.com for all the ticket information or ticketmaster.com. Now, you guys also made the announcement. You've got some heavy hitters involved in this from an ownership standpoint. Another one announced yesterday, NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Earnhardt Jr. joining the fray.
We're just thrilled to have Dale Jr. join us from an ownership perspective. I think it speaks to the diversity and just the overall attractiveness of what we're putting together. He's a huge fan of Nashville. He's a huge music fan. I think that those pieces in particular are very unique to what we're doing. And I think he just saw the vision of what we were creating. Really enjoys several of the other owners and knows them from business dealings and personal relationships. And so I think that you know, we're thrilled to have him join the group. And again, I think it just speaks to what we are creating. This is not something that is here for 1 year. This is an event that is here for 3, 5, 15, 20 years. We hope that it mirrors success in Long Beach and St. Petersburg and Toronto and places like that where urban racing festivals have been a staple on the annual calendar for years. So that's our vision, and I think that that's really what he and his team bought into.
I heard Tim Duggar was the one that really closed this deal.
That may have been the case. I mean, you and I both are buddies with Tim Duggar, great guy. They are good friends. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, I think that Tim may have sealed the deal.
2.17-mile, 11-turn circuit, possibly getting to 200 miles an hour over the Korean Veterans Bridge. I can't wait to see these Indy cars go flying across that bridge. And not to mention, you know, the ownership group, but Joseph Newgarden, who is a Nashville guy, Hendersonville guy, he's going to be in this thing, two-time IndyCar champion, seven-time NASCAR champion Jimmy Johnson moving over to open wheel. He's going to be in it. And three-time Indy 500 champion Elio Castroneves. So you're going to see some big stars, not only of IndyCar, but, of course, Jimmy with NASCAR.
No question. I think that it just, again, it speaks to the event that we're creating. It speaks to Nashville. It speaks to the desire for people to be involved with a major event. And we're thrilled with and very humbled by all of the drivers, the athletes, the teams, all of them who have marked down Nashville, marked down August 6th through 8th on their calendar as an event that they've got to bring out their partners and their families. And it's just going to be a fantastic event. And we're thrilled with everything that has happened thus far. Lots of work still to do, but very excited to put tickets on sale, very excited to announce Dale Jr., and thrilled to see the lineup of racers headed by, of course, you know, our own Joseph Newgarden to be on the docket.
Well, again, tickets go on sale Tuesday at 10 a.m., as low as $119 per person. for General Admission. Chris, appreciate the time. Best of luck planning everything. I'm going to be there. You already know that. Can't wait for it August 6th through 8th.
Thanks, Chase. Really appreciate it, buddy. Have a great one.
You too. Chris Parker with the Music City Grand Prix. And again, MusicCityGP.com is the website, or Ticketmaster.com when tickets go on sale. It's Tuesday at 10 a.m. As we wrap things up, it's time for some Sunday money. All right, this is what I'm going to do. We did this last week and every week. To end the show, we'll look at the Vegas odds from BetMGM, and I will give you three bets that I like and one long shot to win the race. The favorite is Chase Elliott at plus 200, and I simply, you know, sometimes I go against the favorite. I go against what Vegas thinks. I can't do that here. He's so dominant on these road courses, and showed it last year. They have seven road course races on the schedule this year, this being the first. Chase Elliott was in position going after Ryan Blaney in trying to win the Clash a couple of weeks ago. I think that there is a chance that he could do it again, and I have to have Chase Elliott on my list at plus 200. So got him there. And then I'm going to go with Ryan Blaney, who was right there with him. Ryan Blaney at plus 1,000. Pretty good odds there. I mean, that's some good value if you take Ryan Blaney. Felt like that he was going to be in contention last week, too. Got caught up in that wreck at the beginning. So Blaney at plus 1,000. Now, here's a wild card in the whole mix. AJ Allmendinger is running this race. He is plus 1,400. I have him as well because AJ is a road course ringer. He's going to run the Xfinity race today. He's running full-time in the Xfinity series. But I do like AJ Allmendinger coming in and trying to steal one in the Cup Series. Plus 1,400, very good value. And then the long shot, got to go with my man Bubba. Bubba Wallace in some really good equipment. They looked really good last week in the 500. Plus 10,000 for Bubba Wallace. Not much of a road course racer, but we haven't seen him in this type of equipment. And Denny Hamlin knows a thing or two about making rights and lefts. So there you go. There are your Sunday money picks. I'll tweet those out as well. My thanks to Cole Custer, Chris Parker for joining us. If you miss any of today's show, check it out on the podcast. Just search for Chasing Checkers. It's also at thegamenashville.com. That is going to do it for this edition of Chasing Checkers. Enjoy the racing from the Daytona Road Course. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.